Rob. I sent intention. Love yourself. Keep it in mind when you look out at others. We are all in different stages of grief. Love each other. I am here for you. I need your help. We are still looking for a few things, an open circle, drums, and a fire burning bright. We will have to summon the fire from within, the path illuminated before us, create light.
Welcome, welcome, everybody. This is Sharon Smith, and here on Iambic Podcast, I got my man, the activist, poet, performer, farmer, and one of the only people I know from the New York that represented harder than ever. I'd like to give y'all Rob Esperanza. What up, God?
Hey. Thank you.
No doubt. But no, man, thanks for coming on the show and stuff. I'm amped because I want to talk to you about, I know we had a show that was supposed to happen in September, but it got closed down. It was going to be up in Colfax, but we are still, we're still boys, and I was wanting to rock that, but COVID did kick in, and it's the thing now. But no, I always wanted you on the show and stuff. I've talked to a lot of the Stack Slam 2015 crew. And I know you've been one of them, and I was going to talk to you about. But first of all, let's get down to the nitty gritty. Where are you from? And tell us about your story.
Okay, so I was born in the Bronx, New York, through White Plains, through high school, middle school, which is half hour up from Manhattan area, and then went to Prince Falls for 5 years, which is closer to Canada, all the way up north in the city. And then we wound up here in Sac 10 years ago. So my wife and I, the cat, just drove across the country, kind of blind.
So being that you're from New York, what part of New York are you from?
I was born and raised in the Bronx.
Oh, okay. South Bronx or...
No, South Bronx ain't shit.
No doubt. So what part of the Bronx is? Because I know there's a lot of Bronx people.
31st Street on White Plains Road.
Okay. Yeah. So since you're out there for so long and stuff, I know you're a hip hop head. Sure. What kind of hip hop were? Was the 80s and 90s stuff? What?
Right, so you got Elements. It's underground for me, so if it was on the radio, I wasn't about it.
Okay.
Essentially. And so the underground scene was comprised of Arsonist, Smut Peppers, Cage, a whole bunch of heads that were on NYU radio at night. Stretch and Bobbito were spelling out the next cats on the scene. Eminem came through that scene. Everybody who was somebody was on that radio show.
It's like you're talking about a lot of the 90s cats, 93, 94.
Mid-late 90s, right?
That okay.
And okay. It was B-boys, B-girls, and all kind of ways,
A lot of the Ruckus crew.
No, right then it was basically Zulu Nation running all.
Okay. B-girl. So is that what's giving you somewhat of your political standpoints and stuff?
For sure, because naturally as you enter those spaces, they're in schools, they have activists speaking, they're talking about the local representation mattering before you're voting and helping you understand that.
Okay.
Your place in that is, right?
So,
it's born there.
So you being so also, I've heard that you also were a rapper back in the days and stuff.
Yeah, no, definitely. We started out Cyphers in the Corner and talking shit about your mama.
So what transitioned from rapper to, did you do, you went to New Orleans for a while?
Absolutely. So that's like the perfect ideal of a transition, right? So like in 2000, I think. I can't remember what year, but honestly, I was 17, whatever year that was. Mm-hmm. And my wife and Lee Mark, like my two best friends, surprised me by taking me to the New Eurekan. And we had heard about it. You seen Def Jam poetry, you seen all this thing going on, right? Sure. But yeah, I haven't been in there. And so we walk in and it's Miguel Pinheiro, who's from the 70s, 60s, street musician, poet, artist. And his friend hooked him up with a space to represent by. And that still stands today as a milestone. Every Wednesday, every Friday are slams.
Okay.
And so I pointed at that stage at 17 and was like, that's going to be me one day. Right. And it was from hip hop right then. So I was writing hip hop verses, kind of a lot of almost like prose poetry, but it was hip hop. You know what I mean? And like catching verses and bars without the beat.
Right.
And then hip hop kind of got, Ani DeFranco said it, I believe. Hip hop was tied up in the basement with a logo stuck in her mouth.
Mm.
And okay. It was Philly rap, it was guns, it was drugs, it was hoes, it was everything underground turned into commercial radio. Right? Okay. So I kind of got turned off by the scene, and right at the same time was introduced to this whole poetry slam. You know, and I didn't slam until 2015. Like, so that was 15, 17 years later.
So speaking that you didn't slam, so did you, but you're still doing somewhat the same, even when you moved from New York to Sacramento?
I was going to the slams in New York. Okay. I was not competing.
Okay. But you're just going there just to pass time, just to get on the mic and
see if you were. Scene, dude, that shit was packed. The smoked room, everybody's still smoking inside then. It was a bar, radio, live, DJs pumping, MC was always correct, you know, and it was just so much energy in this brick building, open building.
So with that being in mind, when you came to Sacramento, was Sacramento your first stop or was it somewhere else?
No, we went straight from Northern New York to Sacramento.
Okay.
We wound up on Arden, Motel 6.
Okay.
Powered in over there and found the river by mistake. And what? It was so well preserved. It was nature within a city. I'd never met that so well in any city I'd ever been in, you know?
Yeah.
And I've seen most of the big cities in the country, and those riverfronts will be private residents. Like, you can't go there. And the fact that it was preserved and open to the public was incredible to me. So we kind of fell in love with that. And like all the natural seasons of fruit and food, it was a good fit.
So yeah. now that you got me thinking, when you're in New York, did you always like get into like the farmer side of things and stuff, or did it just start happening here?
Man, what was that like? Once we went to Northern New York, there was that book Into the Wild, and they made a movie, right? And the kid gave up his ID, burned his car in the desert, and walked up to Alaska. Remember this kid?
Right.
And he died. He didn't know what to do. Hmm. And it made me reflect a lot that, like, if I did this, if I gave everything up and just walk into the wilderness, I would definitely not survive.
Okay.
Not more than a season. Right? And I was like, well, how do I change that fact? And I didn't want to hunt. Everybody I was talking to hunted up there was drunk while they do it. Right. And I was like, that's not the one. And I kind of felt like agriculture was a black plague of our planet. Because I was used to monoculture and big pharma and all these other ways, right? So I was introduced to CSA, which is still a fairly new concept to some people.
What's CSA? Community
supported agriculture.
Okay.
So me being a farmer, let's say I got an acre right here. I could charge you right now $450, and you're going to get a box of produce from now till the season's over, but you're paying up front, right? Uh-huh. And then that's going to make me, as a farmer, have this lump sum in the beginning of the season to run my operation, right. You know? And so it's kind of a low-cost, low-overhead model of the community supporting agriculture, literally. And so, you know, you would get 10 to 13 items in a box each week, depending on what I was harvesting right now.
Oh, so you basically, was that?
I would plan accordingly, right? Like if I ran, my first CSA was 83 people and it was off an acre and I had enough produce growing that I went to 3 farmers markets on top of it. Like I provided more than I needed off that acre.
Oh, well, damn. You know? And this is all because you, when you moved over to Colfax, or has this been before?
No, I was out in New York, so that was when I was in North New York, Adirondack Mountains. First farmed in Washington County, where naturally the number one cash crop, even back then in 2000, was cannabis.
Really? Okay.
You know, like, and then that's still illegal there, but they're still number one cash crop. But it was organic. So I was doing vegetables, fruit, pigs, chickens, and it was one crazy lady on 180 acres. We did 40 acres at a time with 2 of us.
Dang.
And a tractor and her drunk father. Right?
Nice.
But it was real, dude. Like, I fell in love with my bare feet in that soil. And I didn't know that was a passion. I never grew no food. I never heard the process. I never saw the plants. I didn't understand the communication and responsibility of advocating for the soil, right? Like, I consider myself today a soil farmer more than anything, right? Like, I'm building soil. That's what I'm trying to sell. You know, it's not the food that you're coming off with. That's just a byproduct.
Right.
You know?
Okay. So when you moved out here with Kat, and you came into Sacramento, and you, like you said, you went to the river and you saw a river not basically propertized by anybody and anything. How was that culture shock from New York and California's?
Well, you know, you could sit on that river and potentially, like, all you're going to see is a power line. You know, you're not going to see your homes. You're not going to see much, no business, no billboards. You know, and to walk a quarter mile away from a city street and be in the wilderness was unbelievable. I never met that.
Right.
And it struck me such a way that I had to understand, like, how could you accomplish this? Mm. Right. And so it was FEU.
You deserve it. I want to say in like the mid 20s, 60s, 50s, maybe.
Mm.
And it's damn today, it's a mile and a half. On each side of the river. That would be preserved.
I think you're covering the mic.
Yeah, I'm sure I am, but no, that's from the river, you know, that's preserved.
Right.
And that standing order.
So speaking from standing order, so how'd you feel about the people? And so was there a difference in the way Californians acted than New Yorkers? I know there is, but.
Yeah, and I mean, for me, it was a tempo, it was an attitude. Right, like in New York, somebody's gonna kind of shake you violently and be like, "Why didn't you get it done yesterday?"
Right.
Whatever it is you're talking about, you know. And then you can't make eye contact so well in New York without a conflict, you know. And so here, it was much slower. It was like, "Oh, you got tomorrow." They'll pat you on the leg and don't worry about it, you know. Whatever the fuck you're talking about again, and then the pace, like, changes naturally with that approach.
Right.
And so there's not so much pressure. It kind of breathes easier. And like, naturally, I look at the bank when we first went out here. Some bank was offering some extra. So we got in there and the manager I was talking to pulled up on a Harley female, incredibly attractive, sophisticated, had the suit on, dreads, tattoo. And I was like, yo, where are we? That this manager just pulled off a Harley with dreads and tattoos looking right,
right,
you know, and acting right. Like, it was very strange to me. Where in New York, it's kind of unacceptable behavior. You can't come in no job with a tattoo showing and all these little nuances, right?
Mm-hmm.
Social nuances that are kind of unspoken truths, right?
Okay. So did you start doing poetry when you got out here, or was it just more trying to get yourself a level in?
No, out there, I did a lot of like exhibition poetry, right? So I would go to colleges, I would go to different groups and just kind of read,
right?
And like be a feature many places, and started running workshops because my wife was working in a bookstore, and or she was running workshops and I was participating, and it started to like grow my mind because I wouldn't sit down and write. I still don't, like, I don't appreciate forcing my own hand at it, right? Like, it kind of just comes as it may.
I've always talked about your style. You have an interesting style. You like you said, you always like write maybe a couple sentences, but you always like patch them together. You don't really go into like a full on discussion of writing a lot of stuff.
Right. Whereas like, I think that's evolved over the last few years, 5 years, let's say, since the slam, right? Where I started not having as much time in life with a baby and the slam at the same time. And I was like, oh, I got this poem I need to write down. It's coming spitting out of my head real quick. I got to put it down. And I'll put the title down. And that's it. And then I'll have it in my mind like, okay, this poem is written. I just got to remember what the concept was. And so then I started having all these concept poems that essentially could be a fresh experience each time because it was kind of freestyle off the idea, right? The main idea. And then I would just read a list of titles. I started doing that. I was like, you know what? I'm not going to read a whole poem. I'm going to read a list of titles.
So basically, it almost came like you had a list poetry.
Yeah, like list poems started happening by mistake because I didn't have time to write. That's the title.
Okay. I was going to say it's kind of Jay-Z-esque, but yeah, you kind of just played it in your head, but you actually have a list of things you just wanted to say, and then just wrote over those, read those.
So let's say like at a Luna's feature, when I had the whole band out, I did a 45-minute set. It was probably 2015. And I literally had one poem in front of me that was just a list of titles. That was when it started. And I was like, I'm just going to read a title, spit the poem, and when I run out of juice, I must read the next title, spit the poem, and I ran for 45 minutes off the one poem.
That's trippy. Speaking of the band, so say the name of the band again, because I know I've always looked at it and I was like, I don't know how to say this thing.
It's the female form of a troubadour from like the 13th century English.
Okay.
And so it's a troubadourites.
Okay.
And I write it in phonetic form so you could imagine how it sounds.
And I see that there's always different members in it, but who is basically the nucleus in the band? The people that mostly come around a lot.
Actually, you're going to have spacewalkers always there. And then I always have usually the flute, whether it's Linda or Flute Angel was original. And then Clark came because it was like the inside story. I was playing reggae with them. And I was like, yo, y'all want to come join me for a poetry event? Like, come back it up. And it was such a natural fit that they were kind of the nucleus for a long time. And then that evolved over the years as I met different musicians. And so now it's like a list of 24 people that I'll contact in order, so to say, of who's available first. And if the first one's not available, I'll move on to the next. And like, we'll make up a group of 5 to 7 people by the end of the night.
Okay. That's what's up. Okay. That was actually the band that when playing over at the Sacramento Poetry Center, what was it? Last year or so? No, 2 years ago.
Right? Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, well, you and Ike, yeah.
But it was like Daniel was guitar, was Jesse Bennett on drums, Spacewalker, and Linda on the flute. And like, that's the core, right? At least the four ways before you proceed.
So, here's a question. So, tell me the differences or if you see a comparison with Sacramento poetry and South Bronx or just New York City type poetry? Is there a difference or a comparison or anything?
Yeah, it's interesting because in New York, there wasn't as many clear-cut scenes, right? So, like, it was just a mishmash, and you get all these cats at one spot. And everybody be choosing themselves, and it was good. And it'd be a couple good ones in the night where you would remember each time. And then coming to SAC, it was like, you had to choose what kind of poetry you're going to read tonight and who you want to hear, right? So, like, what you in the mood for? Academic is what I found first in SAC. And it was like the library and what was his name? Bob Stanley and all that whole thing through the Poetry Center. And then it fell into Mahogany from there. And Mahogany was home for a long time. And then Cafe Luna didn't come till like the end, you know? So I was doing Shine for Midtown Out Loud before Speak Out SAC. And that's where I met the 2015 SAC Slam team. They were getting ready to travel to Italy, looking fresh, looking hungry, you know? And I was like, ooh, I like that little crew. They come in correct. They're strong. They're together. They're always coming thick and taking up a whole spot for the night, you know? And I was like, I could dig that. And I read some old piece. And Jenny Lynn was like, all right, you got to come to Luna's and do the slam. And I was like, what? Who knew there was a slam in SAC? I didn't even, never heard of it. I've been here like, what, 5 years already, and I hadn't heard none of that from anybody, anywhere. And so I was like, okay, I'll go play. It's a small city. Let's be honest. I'm coming from a big pond. And I was a little fish. And that felt kind of more like the opposite end of like a big fish in a little pond, right? By the time I slammed once, I had enough of a score to place fifth in the city. I was like, that's how lazy y'all are? You only went to one open mic all season? You only went to one slam all season? Y'all could have went twice and beat me. Anybody. Anybody could have went twice and beat me. But they didn't. And I got in. You know, and it felt like that was the accomplishment in itself. I almost felt like I won already. Right then, I was like, I'm good. This was it. Like, I just wanted to make it to that stage. And I was done. Like, I didn't really need much more out of that. Right? And the baby was new. And there was so much pressure to memorize. They wanted me to rewrite myself. And I was like, I wrote 6 new poems trying to be honest about my shit. I was like, these things ain't what I want. None of them. So I canned it all. We had like 2 weeks left. And I was like, listen, y'all, I can't do this. Can't do it. Not going to sit here and memorize 6 new poems that I don't dig. Not yet. And so I backed off from the comp and basically took over like the coaching position. And Jenny jumped into the comp. And it was cool because we went to Oakland. It was right close to home. Right, so a bunch of us down there. And I just took all the workshops, every one of them. And it was 700 poets or 400 poets in the city, something like that, 70 teams. And every day there was about 6 or 7 workshops at the same time, all through the day. And I took all amazing.
What do you think about the workshops and just the feel of the environment of slam?
Yeah, interesting, because it was like semi-quasi like academic, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so it was the street edge of academia. Hmm. So it was interesting, like, mix. And Oakland has a really strong scene, after all, for poetry. Right. And they were about it, dude. There was like underground scenes at night that they weren't publicized. You had to just know, go find the right basement, you know, and money was getting thrown down. Like, it was a real old school battle.
You kind of feel at home at there? It's like, oh, these guys are rapping. These guys are going for it.
And felt real good for that 2 weeks. I think he was there like a week and a half. Felt real good, you know? I got to know the city pretty well. And there was a protest that I jumped in, and that was it was kind of similar to the times, right?
Because that was the 2015, so that was, who died on that one?
I can't tell young boy's name either. I can't tell you. Because it was about 5 times in the back, and there was like 200 people walking by. It was our night off, only night off. And I was like, yo, David, hold. Or, you know, hold half a sandwich for me, because I didn't get my food yet and drink the beer, I'm out. And I jumped in the line, and I basically like interviewed more than half of those folks. Like, what is going on? Why are y'all here? What are you about? And it was majority white folks, and a young black boy got shot in front of his grandma's house in the back 5 times. And so we marched the whole city, and they corralled us away from the gentrified neighborhoods, and they pushed us back into the projects. And we kept losing numbers because Black Lives Matter is calling out anarchists and cursing white kids in the neighborhood. And the whole line's made up of the white kids from the neighborhood. So by the time they get to the spot where the kid was shot, we've wrecked so much stuff. We've hurt people on the cars. Young kids are scared. Like, they're really wrecking things. And I'm not comfortable with it. And so I direct them to the spot where he got shot. I'm like, let's go to that scene. And we took the freeway over there. And then they wasn't letting folks through. There was an old man, couldn't breathe. And I could see him gasping like 3 cars back. And I went up. I was like, what's good? And he said, I need my oxygen. I need a new tank. And the dude behind him hopped out right then. I was like, yo, I'm Black Lives Matter. And he's like, let him through. Let him through. And I was like, yo, this dude can't breathe. And he's like, is he Black Lives Matter? And I was like, he can't breathe. And they didn't want to let him through. And so I kind of pushed the issue and got him out and then left. And like the whole scene shut down. And in the morning, it just happened to be the slam competition had organized, like a black movement poetry reading at City Hall, happened to be the next day in the morning, right? That was so powerful. We all went in there. And now you see the truth was the boy was stealing cars and shooting cops. And that's why he got shot. And it's like, does it matter? Does it matter? And it don't. It doesn't matter. Right? Because like the initial response, in my opinion, is the need to react. Right? Not to evaluate before you react. And sure, you have to evaluate for your own safety, right? Like in any circumstance of first aid and all those things, health. And safety comes to you first, right? Like, you're going to assess the situation. You're not going to get electrocuted. You're not going to get hurt. Then you can help somebody, right?
So, let me just backtrack.
Yeah.
So, as you are someone, I've always known you as an activist type of person. You've been with ZFGs and gone even into Sacramento's, the capital. And done your poetry, or you know,
a long time ago, like it started with the World Trade Organization, it started with the World Bank, IBF, in like late 90s. I was in a lot of those marches, and then troops support our troops, all those movements, right? And then Occupy is kind of where I stopped. When it came to, because you know, I was there for against Bush, near and all that, and it didn't matter. I felt God's doing so much in vain, right?
So just with that fact, how do you feel about the whole protesting now with the George Floyd thing and stuff? And
no, this is needed, man. If we don't come to a fundamental break, right? Because I think it's such an interesting climate. Allowed for this, right? Because this has been going on. This is not new. New York City hat man say the same thing. I can't breathe. I can't breathe. Selling Lucy's in the street, cigarettes for change. And he got killed, choked out by the cops, just like Chris, right? And it's like, that thing was almost 15, 20 years ago. And now we care. Now we care, right? And so awareness is the first step, of course, of organizing and protesting and standing up is to bring awareness, right? But after you've brought enough awareness, you have to implement some kind of capacity of change. How do I immediately affect my environment right now? And so these protests are so important, right? And it's such a strong point that during a time where there's so much risk, we're going to stand up anyway.
But I'm going to pull one point out. But as you point out about the Black Lives Matter group, with that one situation with the man who basically couldn't breathe and stuff, do you feel that the mobilization or there's still people that feel that if he's not with us, he's not, we're against him type of feel is still relevant, or what is?
Yeah, it's still a secular environment, right? Where we are driven to divisions and lines in the sand of how we differ and who we should support and what we should focus on personally in our lives. You know, and it's like almost, I've been watching too many short documentaries right now, and it's weird, right? Because, like, it's all the same mentality across the board. Don't snitch.
Right.
Get with your race. Protect your neck.
Right.
You know, and, like, there was a time where I cared enough for the person next to me. Period.
I think about that. You're right. You're right. So, do you, since you have moved out of SAC and, you know, you've mostly walked in from afar, have you seen some things, you know, now that we're up in Nevada County and stuff, or have you seen some things even in Nevada County are doing that caught your attention? Because even, because like for me, I've seen, I'm in Grass Valley. And I go down the way and I saw like a handful of white kids protesting, you know, against in the streets.
These little counties up here are full of safe little white protests. Mm-hmm. You know, like anybody else to lead it. And I think it's interesting because it's almost like a safe play, right? Why don't you go to SAC?
Go where the shit is.
Yeah. And it's like, okay, I want somebody to see me. I want somebody to know I care. You know, it's like raising that hand of support, so to say.
Right. But it's not getting into where the real problem is going.
There's no juice over here, right? Like, yeah, of course, we have a fundamental issue. There's so much racism up here. And to see some white folks standing up is a big thing. Right? But it's not enough.
Right. I also did see a vending Trump supporter vending stuff and all that. Also in Auburn. So
I'm happy you said that. There was a guy in Colfax, and I had to play that song. Fuck Donald Trump. Nipsey Hussle. Thank you, Nipsey. Yep.
Nipsey. Rest in peace. And I'm
real slow creeping by that dude, and you should have seen his face. And then I felt like I'm playing the same game.
Hmm.
It wasn't the right way to be about it.
Mostly the us against them, huh?
Exactly. You know, and it draws that line so clearly.
You're true about that, man. So,
why can't I talk to the man? What if I did? What if I did?
I've tried to just see about people's reactions to just the point of even some people I know, they've either associated themselves with the idea that the MAGA hat is just a Ku Klux Klan robe or hoodie, and they have associated it that way.
It's like, you know, when Trump calls the rioters, which are not, they're protesters, thugs, it's the PC version of the N-word. know what I mean? Like, that's acceptable for him to call him that way. That's what he's calling. It's all under a guise, a mask of a very light facade, you know?
But it's just the point of that he's still keeping it that way, and we're letting him, or we're allowing it.
So when you look, did you see what happened in El Dorado Hills?
What happened?
So, right, so I think it was I don't know if it was a law school. It was something prestigious, medical students, something like about the life, right?
Right.
And it was two vans full of young African-American boys. And the chauffeurs were trying to show them, this is what you can aspire to. And they brought them out to El Dorado Hills. Five different people across the town called the cops. Three of the calls, two of the calls were ignored. When the cop showed up, he apologized. But it was too late. Rumors are circulating. Now you got the Simpsons, Facebook groups running around, neighborhood checks, all the things, right?
Right.
And they sent the National Guard to El Dorado Hills because of those two vans of boys. The National Guard came out there for that. And so the lady came on Facebook or whatever outlet she was media-wise, and she said, I feel like the Second Amendment right is in need, and called for arms because she was being infiltrated.
Wow.
Called for arms in the streets of El Dorado Hills. And they didn't bring the National Guard out because of the guns. They brought them out because of the boys.
Yeah.
In the van. And that's... We're systemically, you know, we're systemically broken. In the process of trying to show these boys what they can aspire towards, we've shown the broken system again and again.
Yeah. That's the truth. I mean, yeah. Ah, now I think about that. They can't even come out and see it. They have to be, you know, it's. They got to be where they're at, and we got to be where we're at.
What is two vans full doing over here?
Yeah.
Are you kidding me? I can't even bring my boys up to tour to show them what life could be? Come on, man.
Yeah, that's true. Damn. So, we got to break the system, the mentality in within, as much as we got to break it from, yeah. Damn.
Got a long way to go, you know, and it's like I feel like the damage being done by Mr. Oompa Loompa over here is going to take 75 years plus to correct, right. You know, and it's like we were already 50, 60 years behind.
Right.
We're talking over 100 years worth of work to do to get to a good place, not even to make progress.
Mm.
Right. And that shit happens exponentially when it's crashing. As you can see with this whole COVID business, but it takes a long time to come back.
Did you feel like COVID kind of put a little reset on the capitalism community itself? Because it technically told the capitalists that you ain't doing that no more here and shut them down for a little bit.
Again, right? Like the first ones to get saved, the first one to get put back on. Mm-hmm. Big business stays open. Right. Small business crashes.
Right.
You know, like how do big box stores open? Target got a little bit of food. They stay open. Out of here, man.
Yeah. I feel you, man. Yeah. It did bring that back into play. And now even the workforce and even the disease still can make people say, you got to work or you got to die. Which one you want to go?
Oh. Yeah. No, it's a pulling of the veil. You know, and like the president gave permission to hate.
Yeah.
He came in and people were like, oh, yeah, I did hate something, but I didn't know I could talk about it.
Hmm.
And like, that's a dangerous tool to hand any citizen permission to hate. Right. And like, when this whole thing went down, I was afraid, man. I was like, watch. New York City's going to beat up some Chinese people because they coughed.
Mm, yeah.
And it goes down. It went down.
Yeah. It did.
You know, and it's like, again, the oppression and the suppression of people with lines in the sand. We got to blow that wind, man.
Yeah. Feel you on that one. Yeah. Man. But let me switch gears on this a little bit. All right. So, as you know, in the community, in the poetry community, there are poets who basically write in books, publish books, and read their books out in public or give their books out in public. We call those the page poets. And then we have the performers who either write CDs, plays, or basically do my songs and stuff. And we call those people the stage poets. And there's always been a rift between them where we have the page versus the stage. So I'm going to ask you, Rob, what do you feel comfortable in? The page, the stage, or both?
Well, it's interesting, right? Because I remember well
through that 2015 slam, like, everybody's like, you got to drop the book. Don't have a book in front of you. And then I never did. Right? Like, there was probably one poem I memorized. It's because I knew it when I was a kid. I didn't memorize it now. And I left it like that. And I remember an audience member coming up in Oakland and was like, you know, I was so impressed. You had that all memorized. And I was like, no. I just looked you in the eye. Right? So I didn't stare at my book. I didn't have my book in front of my face. I had it down about my waist. And I only glanced at it. I didn't stare at it. Right? And so the experience can change for an audience member to feel like you didn't read out of a book. It is possible. Right? And like, I've seen that over and again where, yeah, people come up and like, I can't believe you memorized that. And like, I didn't. I read it out of a book. But then, even as far as like spitting goes, I will tell you the truth, right? I feel like I have more expression, play with tonality, and like freedom when I'm not reading off a page. And I don't mean memorized. It's more like coming off the cuff, top head, freestyle type, where it's like, you know, they did a UC Berkeley study of a performer reciting and a performer freestyling. And they did brain scans. The brain lit up while you're freestyling. And while you were reciting, there was no synapses at all. You're not stimulating yourself enough just coming off a page. And that shows to the audience, to the experience as a whole.
So is it more of the passion of, even though the page just to get you organized with your thoughts, but the stage is still you?
Right. Yeah, exactly. Like, even if I'm coming off a page, I'm still that stage performer.
Almost like how a band has a playlist that they just have on the floor, just going, okay, this is the song playing next.
Uh-huh. And that might change. It might change through the night. You just make the list as like a framework, right? So you, like you said, you have yourself somewhat organized.
Right.
In the session this evening.
Okay. And I know you're a hip hop fan and stuff, so I'm going to ask you, Rob, what's your top five rappers?
Ooh, top five rappers. Not in ranked order.
Right.
I'm just going to spit them, right? Mm-hmm. So you got, let's say, Mos Def, Black Thought, Talib Kweli. I'm going to have to come around and say Common. Mm. And then, what I did right there. Four already?
Mm-hmm.
I'll say Immortal Technique.
Oh, Immortal. Wow. Okay.
Yeah, it'll be a top five list.
Okay. I give you that. So, yo, man, what's up? What's next for you now? What's coming up next for you right now?
Something. Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, music's not happening. I was expressing myself through music a lot, live performance. And that's kind of shut down. I see Nevada County's got live music back, but I didn't tap in it, you know? And I think the next thing is, yeah, going to be that Colfax wine and chocolate poetry. I'll organize it. It'll probably be like a year out now. All right? Who knows how that works? So essentially, I'm at home, man. I'm just gardening, taking care of the baby, you know, and like really digging in to the new space. I just moved into Auburn.
Oh, you over with Auburn?
Yeah.
Okay. You're still not far away from me.
Yeah. So it's really nice. You know, got a friend's property we're staying on in a nice house, and it just feels like a real dream right now. And so I haven't really thought about much else. Like, I just pulled out the instruments for the first time in a couple months the other day. And it was like, wow, well, I didn't pull that out in mad long. I didn't even realize time was going, you know?
They're playing the bongos or congas?
Yeah, yeah. Djembes, congas, all kind of ways, Doombek, and percussion.
I forgot about that. You do that because I know you did that over at the Slam Wrestling Federation show.
Yeah, we did the drum battles. Yeah. And slam poetry drum battle.
Okay.
I love that reaction, right? Because I remember the lady in the crowd was like, can they do that? And it's like, can who do what? You know, you do what you want.
Yep. All right, coming out with his poem he's going to bring to the masses.
Intent, keep us free from harm. May our path remain clear. Rid us of all obstacles and unforeseen mishaps. Allow for victory. Our purest desires be true. Champions we are. Let us rule destiny, set honest intention, feel, see, taste, hear, smell our ancient ways. Sing a heart song like I create the wind on your neck. Taste truth on the tip of my tongue like the fire burning flesh a little further upriver after walking for days with no one in sight. Cure us. Release the faint heart of past transgression. I sit still at my table, fire flicking madly in my eye, speaking my future in great detail. We move on April Fool's Day. Grass Valley, green as ever, opens its arms to greet us with a warm embrace. I will find fulfilling work with children and farm independently through the summer. Our tribe is waiting. People, places, and things anticipate our every move. Whisper, the time is now. I deserve this. I am grateful for the abundance we are to receive, the pleasant days and long nights to breathe, forever indebted, for we are blessed. Caress down the moment like a long-lost lover. Appreciate the weight of serendipity and my place in it. My daughter will carve out her joy from sadness, as though rivers do create canyons. The relief left in its wake will strike us for generations to come. I pray for those I care for, those less fortunate to find peace of mind. And all they need to fill the void? Silence is important. Take a moment. I spend a little extra energy on those certain members who expended my goodwill. For those who took advantage of more than I, in short, instead of talking, shh. I send love letters and bottles afloat in your name every time I feel the need to curse you. I smite your practice, but that's not how to fix it. I smile. I will make the next move, knowing very well that influence I might impress. Protect us. Power within, guide me. Lend us your divinity. Earth, as you rear your plants for sustenance, alleviate us our ailments and cover our skin. Water, please cleanse and heal us. Wind, let us feel your sky against our back and remind us to stay rooted. Thank you for fire, being death and destruction, but also light. Elements create spirit. Ancestors, lend us your ears. knowledge, experience, guidance, and protection. I shall follow closely, for the tide pulls full against the classic dance of energy, ebb, and flow me back to sleep. Close our eyes, yet keep our minds open. Dream to escape nightmares, our simple self-inflicted acts of war. Forget about fear until it relents. Kindness is of great political and social import. Only say what you mean. Speak boldly to yourself. Hold those who you should save and share space with accountable. Make sure you can rely on yourself first. That is the test. Bring me love, kindness, and respect. Be brave. Think bigger this time. Know your worth. Step into it. Lean in. Momentum will always follow. Meditate. Mediate. Exterminate hate. Burn negativity at the stake. Make a good example. You know what to do. Get ready. You're next. Make a better choice. Unapologetically express yourself. Keep it up. Stay blessed. If you worry too much about the rest, you will lose yourself. Stay focused, present. Thank you. I can never say that enough. Praise the baby steps. Good job. I'm ready to back you up. Whatever it takes.
Yeah. Well, man, why don't you let the people know whether if you want them to find you and stuff on your social media or anything.
Did you bring that up? Like, I washed that clean over a year ago. No more social media. So if you want to find me, subscribe on YouTube. It's been kind of inactive. I'll put some new stuff soon. But Rob Esperanza. And then real, y'all just hit me on the phone. 530-360-9677.
Put your number out there.
530-360-9677. Hit it up.
I'll put it out, but I don't want to put your number out there. All right, man. Yo, man, take care of yourself. We'll talk soon or later. I mean, you're my hometown. You're in close to me, so we both neighbors and stuff. But nah, man, we're going to see each other soon, all right?
For more information, please go to linktr.ee/iambiczine. IAMBICZINE. Thank you.